Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking Jack Daniels.
That's that road to Adepticon.
I gotta get.
If my liver can't take it, then
I gotta get hard. So I'm mixing it up. What are you drinking?
As I told you beforehand, when I got new gin, I was gimmicked by their Bombay Sapphire East, which is vapor infused with additional Thai lemongrass and Vietnamese black peppercorns. And I'm sure if I had a normal Bombay Sapphire and I was doing a side by side, I might be able to just be like, yeah, there's a little something else in there. But when I took, like, I smelled it, like, smells just like gin, and I had a sip of, like, tastes just like gin. Like, I'm not getting anything out of it.
I won't use my jokes.
With fancy gin that cost me $4 more than the normal gin.
There you go. Yeah, I was going to say, I won't reuse my jokes because it feels so hacky. But like just before, I was like, vapor infused. That means it's that they just put some lemongrass in the room while the gin was there. And that was, it's vapor infused. It was in the same, it shared the same air. But anyways, yeah. Okay, cool. I guess I will avoid that and save myself $4.
Yeah, because again, maybe side by side, maybe. I tell you what, I'll bring it up to Provost for ProvoCon, because I'm sure there will be normal gin there.
And you can try them both.
And I will try to do the side by side, but I'm not expecting me to just be like, oh, I see, it's so superb.
Oh, it's got such subtle notes. No, nothing like that.
No.
You are listening to Jada Gamercast. Let's get this party started, talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I played a game of Firestorm Armada against Maddie's new Terrans, with my Dendrenzi. It was just a goddamn massacre. I lost hard. His dice were bananas, but, in general, it was a pretty good game for the most part, but it was just nothing you could do. I was able to put some hurt down. I was able to do some damage here and there, but it, you know, by the time, the 2.5 hour mark rolled around, I was like, yeah, if this were a tournament, it would be over. You'd have a minor win. That's basically where I'm just going to call it.
Yeah.
There was no way for me to come back to it. But I did get my hands on the Dendrenzi Federation Planetary Defense Group. So,
oh, yeah?
The space station and...
Did you run them? Like, how were they?
No, I did not run them because I had literally just opened the box. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, like, oh, man, I'll quickly glue these things together and it'll be great. But no, then I remembered that this was during that period of time where Spartan Games made really stupid decisions with their models. And so these stupid space stations go together with those stupid clear plastic punch outs.
Really?
Yeah. And like, it doesn't even slot properly in, like, the plastic punch out doesn't even slot properly into the model. So like, I will actually need to sit down and play a very awkward balancing game with these stupid plastic cutouts. And then
that
put
loads.
It together and get it going, because unlike my Directorate one, the Dendrenzi one does not use a base whatsoever. It literally just stands on those stupid plastic inserts.
Oh, see, that's actually really awesome for a set of rules that talks about how you have to use the center peg for everything.
Exactly. There's not even a hole for a peg at the bottom, so like I'm going to have to drill one in order to put it in there.
That's an awesome design decision. Yeah. And now you have me regretting, because I picked up the Terran defense platform box set today for the lists that we were talking about. So I have it. I haven't cracked it open yet.
Crack it open. You know why? Because I guarantee you that the defense platforms also do not have holes for pegs, because the Dendrenzi ones don't. They just have little bitty, like little feet on the bottom, and they're just supposed to stand directly on the tabletop. So it's like, okay, so I'm obviously not going to be rolling peg to peg, so like, what the fuck am I rolling from? Like, where am I measuring from on this thing? Stupid.
Yeah, oh my god, that's...
And they're cool models, don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, like, I was looking at
such
the box,
a stupid
and I was
design.
Just like, I cannot wait to paint these bitches up, but, yay?
So, yeah. I will be changing it up in my list. The list played pretty good in general. Like, I didn't feel like it utterly failed. It was just, the first couple of turns went, basically, he fired 4 torpedoes at me and crit a heavy cruiser.
And then I would
roll like 13 hits on his battleship. Or no, what was it? I would roll like 13 hits on his heavy cruiser, and with his two shields, he'd knock off 9. That was basically how the game played the entire way through.
Well, and that's why, like, I love Firestorm Armada, but that is why anytime people are just like, it is such a strategic, tactical game, you're just like, are you fucking kidding me? One dice can quintuple crit a dreadnought.
This is
not a strategic game when the dice are so
rare, though. Like, yes, the dicer, it's a hideous bitch goddess, but it plays both ways. Like, he hit more good rolls than I did. That's the truth, right? But I still hit just as many big, huge blow-up rolls as he did. And, like, my positioning was the only reason why I was still in the game come turn 3. I was able to kind of put myself into a good position where I did have the upper hand in the right places. But,
look,
you know,
I'm not saying that the game has no strategy to it, but at the end of the day, good
dice... You said it's not a strategic game.
No, I said that whenever people talk about how it is a perfect strategic game, I laugh.
Oh, perfect strategic game. Well, no,
because I'm just like... No, there is no such thing, and that's the thing with Firestorm Armada, where it's just like, good dice are insurmountable. It doesn't matter about positioning. If his dice never cool off, you can't win.
I still disagree, but in like the long view at the end of a game, sure, you would be like, all right, his dice were insurmountable that game, there was nothing I could do. But I was still able to do a lot in terms of like, if he had had those dice against somebody else, maybe who was not as experienced, it would have been a landslide on turn 2.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
Anyways, moving on. I also played episode 2 of Telltale's Game of Thrones. I did that on the stream. I think I only had like 2 or 3 people watching me at any given point because it was on like a Friday night.
And zero notice because I think like Terry and I, before we were going out somewhere, it was just like, oh, Lang started doing this. We're like, good for him.
Well, it's just, you know, I was going to play it and I streamed the first episode, so I just decided to stream the second as well. That was pretty fun. Wasn't as good as the first episode. It's definitely not as good as like The Wolf Among Us or Walking Dead at this point, but, it's Game of Thrones. They still haven't fixed the fucking artwork on it where like everything in the background is all glitched out. And like, it's very clear that somebody took the time to draw the art for these scenes, but like their graphics coding is so bad that it just cannot do it properly. Because it seems like it keeps trying to render all these 2D things in 3 dimensions, and by doing that, it breaks, like, it completely breaks the artwork. Mm-hmm. And it's really bad, because it's horribly distracting the whole way through. But it was pretty funny. So, it was pretty enjoyable, all things considered. But yeah, that was my This Week in Hobby. What about you, Nathan?
I did a board game night last night where we won our first ever game of Space Cadets. Which is, if you've ever played the game, a big deal, because holy shit, all you do is lose. We also saved the world from pandemic on the Hail Mary last turn play, so,
nice.
It was a good, productive night. Other than that, this week, I did some painting, stripped some more of my Signar models to get them ready for painting. So at this point, I'm up to, 16 points painted of Signar, and, which... sounds impressive, but it's just 3 light jacks, so it's not very impressive. Yay! So, no, like I said, I'm just plugging away, and I think this upcoming week is going to be the finish painting for Adepticon and then go back to painting War Machine week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, playing that game with my Dindrenzi just went ahead and reaffirmed that I'm making the correct choice with Omnidyne.
I feel like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with an Indrenzi fleet, and I feel like this is another fleet that if you get a chance to really play a game through to the end, they can be very successful for you. But in my experience, playing both with them and against them, when you have that time limit, it's just like, oh, they're just not good. They're not great in that time limit, because you have, like... you need turn 2 to be phenomenal, you need turn 3 to go like gangbusters,
mm-hmm.
and then you need... turns 4 and 5 to turn your ships and maneuver them into a position where you can shoot again and finish up on turn 6.
Well, here's what I've learned. They feel amazing in the first turn.
Yep.
In the second turn, they feel great. But if by turn 3, when you should be putting the majority of your stuff into their primary range band, if you're not getting enough of your like full firepower out onto the table... you've pretty much you've lost at that point. Like if you're just sitting there going like, I'm not rolling 16 dice for my cruiser squads, because they're also beat up or I've lost too many ships. They really fall off. And so they're one of those fleets where if you can make the game stay in your favor after the first two turns, you'll probably finish the game very, very strong.
Yeah.
Because you'll then be able to weather the whole I can't turn worth a shit turns of the game. And if you're smart with your reserves and stuff like that, you'll totally get away with it. So, like, Folding Space deployed my battlecruiser and my corvettes, which in both cases did pretty good.
Yep.
And then I flank deployed a squad of cruisers, so two cruisers and a heavy cruiser, which also worked really well. So, I mean, in general, I think I played pretty sound. I think just the deployment of where I put my battleship was the only real problem on my part. But for the most part, it was kind of went the way that it did, in the sense that, like, because I'd taken such grievous losses in the first two turns, there was just no way for me to. Like, I think only ever once did I roll my max number of dice on a cruiser squadron, which is, like, the worst-case scenario for me. So
Absolutely. And it's just, that's the thing with Dendrenzi, in my experience, where it's just, like, you know, they're like old 3rd edition Tau in 40K, where like, listen, I know that if we're matching up, I'm going to power the shields to the front, I'm going to slingshot around planets as much as I can, I'm going to obscure your kinetics as much as I can.
Right.
Because I know that that's doing it, and I'm fucking drives to maxing my way across the board, because as soon as I get beside you, I've won.
Yeah. Well, and Maddie's fleet was 4 squads of tier 3. So, again, everything I don't want to deal with. So,
yeah.
It was basically, like, the worst possible matchup. It was like when I asked him, I was like, so who do you want? Pick a fleet. He was like, I don't know, man. I've never played these guys, so play your directorate. I was like, okay, that's the worst choice you could possibly make right now. My directorate will have a field day with you. I was like, you know, I could play my Dendrenzi. Like, they're probably the best matchup for you. And so that's what we ended up going with. And I haven't played them that much, so I wanted to kind of get more games in with them, because we played 1,200.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's move things forward. Let's get this thing rolling. Let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we had for you guys last week is, do you have games in your closet of shame? And the resounding vote was 80% yes. The majority of people who voted said they do have items in their closet of shame. 8 people said no. Every purchase I've ever made has been smart, and I do not regret any choice. Moving forward, Adam
said... That last little bit was Lang just, you know, paraphrasing.
That's right. Adam referenced a very crazy Ninja Turtles game that we used to play at our grandfather's house in the summers, which was hilarious, because my cousins and I... and my brother, anytime that we would come to Canada from Arizona for vacation, we would always get into some game, and it was always like, we're playing Overpower this year. Oh, fuck, this year it's Magic. And, oh, man, this year it's this game. And, like, every year it was a new game. So, yeah, like, that, as a kid, that was totally the case. I think it's all of the stuff as an adult is the closet of shame stuff, right? Like, not necessarily the stuff from our childhood. So Todd says, Mage Knight. I thought Mage Knight Dungeon was better. So half a shame Mech Warrior clicks. Mech Warrior clicks because of the point imbalance between rare and common. Oh, yeah. That's so bad. D&D 4th, 5 books of it. There you go. D&D 3.5, except the miniatures handbook. Pathfinder and now D&D 5th is going to be in the closet. Good Lord. Magic the Gathering. I can't believe Pokemon is so much better a game than Magic. Wow. That is... Shots fired. No, it is not. Go fuck yourself. love you, Todd. Can't wait till you're on the show. Monopoly. What a suck game. All right, sure. And then Star Trek Attack Wing. There you go. So obviously we have somebody who's looking back on their gaming career going, good God, all of these, you know, collectible games where they tell you, like, see, like, D&D I totally get, where, like, 5th edition right now, I think I have 5 books total.
It's so good.
And it's like, hey, man, it's great. I love it. D&D 5th edition's fantastic. But when 6 comes out, I'll be looking at all those books going like, ugh. Okay, I gotta go buy everything again. So, yeah, good times. Brian says, currently honoring the Closet of Shame would be a Heavy Gear Utopia Force. Utopia. With an honorable mention to Tau Fort World Battlefleet Gothic.
Woof. That's a lot of money to be sitting in your closet.
Well, and it was so funny because...
Their ships Tau were so much better than the GW ones.
Oh, my God. The GW ones were awful. They didn't look like Tau at all. They looked like... I can't remember what they... It was like... were they not like a Babylon... Like, they looked like a Babylon 5 fleet?
Basically, something every, like that. Every Tau ship had, like, the half-circle front
yeah.
that then tapered into the long, skinny line of the bottom, with, like, lots of bits and bobs underneath. That was every Games Workshop Tau ship, regardless of size. Just every one of them looked like this weird Minecraft-looking fucking pickaxe or some...
Minecraft-looking pickaxe.
There you go. Totally ripped off. Minecraft, Games Workshop's going
to be... There it is right there. Oh, and all of my GW stuff, he goes on to say, because fuck GW. It can go eat a bag of dicks topped with hobo dick cheese. Wait, what was the question again? So, yeah, I think that, you know, I think for a lot of people, GW is in that closet of shame, almost exclusively because of the amount of time spent playing it and building it and buying it. Right. I think for a lot of people out there, they look at Games Workshop and they're just like, oh, God, what was I like? Why did I ever think it was a great idea to spend $1,000 on this new orc army? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
At what point? And even for me, looking back on armies that I had built, even while I was working with the company, I have to go back and think like, oh, my God, like the amount of money I spent on this shit, like just the amount of money just it blows my mind.
Dude. Back when I was
I remember
still working for Chinook, though, remember those tills added up. So ignoring all the trade wins, dollar values, like that till system added it up. And I think I was at like $4,000 or $5,000 at both Kingsway and Chinook Center. And it's just that's like 10 grand of fucking money. And since you were staff, that doubled for the amount of product you have, which is why just like every time I'm like spring cleaning, I'm just going to clean out my closet and I will, and I'll sell everything. And then I'll find another closet full of shit. And you're like, how the fuck do I still have this? And then furthermore, you'll just be like, I bought this. Like I was going through today and I put shit up for sale. I'm like, why the fuck do I have Abaddon? Like when would I have ever bought him? And Ahriman. What?
Wow.
What?
Interesting. Wow, all right. So thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find that at You can find that at jadedgamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. All right, so let's move on to the model of the week. The model of the week has to be rocket shoes. Rocket hooves.
Rocket hooves.
Rocket hooves.
Maybe they're shoes. Like, we don't know what Chaos's blacksmiths are like.
He slips into those things? Like, he's got really tiny, like, ballerina feet?
No, not at all. Like, I'm imagining, like, there's some, like, Chaos Dwarf blacksmith that is hammering them on, like, horseshoes.
Right.
And, you know, these ones, just because it's Chaos Dwarfs, are just, like, rocket shoes.
Well...
You know, when they kept about Plastic Bloodthirster, I got excited. And then they released this, and I was just like,
the next to nothing on the base, it drives me nuts. But the second
at least
thing...
At least he's not standing on a rock, okay? He is standing on a flame-broiled pile of skulls.
I just don't understand why he needs to be leaping. Mid-leap, mid-flight. Like, it's just, it's unnecessary to have rocket shoes. It's fucking fire flame shoes.
Games Workshop has always had the second best Bloodthirster model. And they're just, you know, now they just released a new second best Bloodthirster model. That's all it is.
The
Forge World model is so much better than this. For what? The same price?
Yeah, basically. So this model here is what you would expect for a Khorne Bloodthirster because... It constantly reminds you that it is a Khorne model by the fact that every single inch of this model is covered with a Khorne symbol or a skull.
Or a skull with a Khorne symbol on it.
That's correct. Or horns made into a Khorne symbol.
With
or
a skull.
If you swing the model around, Khorne symbols adorning each and every wing.
No. See, I was going to say, if we're going to stick to the horns, his head antler, like his horns make a mark of Khorne, which squishes a skull that has a mark of Khorne on top of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and then if you zoom in, there are also two marks of Khorne on the horns as well.
Oh my God, that's wonderful.
Just in case you forgot. I mean,
just
listen,
in case you were unsure.
I started painting it, and then I was like, wait, what am I painting again?
My God, dude, I play Slaanesh. What did I even think this model was? But yeah, then you turn the model around. He's got a sweet ponytail with skulls. He has Khorne symbols between each wing.
No. Hey,
the
hey,
of
hey,
each wing. Also Chaos Stars.
I was going to say, that's not fair, because there are four segments on each wing. Only three are Marks of Khorne, and the other one is the Chaos Star. Just in case you forgot that Khorne wasn't Chaos.
Correct. Now, here's the funny thing. Bottom of his shoes, also Marks of Khorne.
Oh, fuck, I didn't notice that. This is
back of his belt, also Mark of Khorne. Now, here's the funny thing, because they didn't want to have a dickless creature with a tightly sculpted ass, they decided to put like a little tail. Disgusting tail on the back, like a little mini tail on the back. It's like, dude, if you're gonna put a little like little tail nub on the back there, like just make a full tail, or put him in a goddamn loincloth. Like, he's wearing armor. You can't just have armor also cover his dick. Am I the only one who feels like that's not completely out of the question for a model like this? In general, do I like this model? No.
No, I hate it. Hey, have you noticed what the... Zoom in on the axe handle.
Oh, God,
what's it made of?
Oh, it's made of skulls.
It's all skulls, baby. All we did was stacked skulls one on top of the other.
Well,
until,
and I mean, okay, I get it. It's a Demon of Khorne. It's supposed to be a Demon of Khorne, and it's supposed to be covered in skulls, skull for the skull throne, so on and so forth. So I get it. Okay, if there's any model where it's appropriate, this is a model where it's appropriate. However, the wings don't look very good. I don't like the layered pockmarks that they have in there. It doesn't work for me at all. I don't understand why it needs to be like that.
Because remember, the old plastic fucking dragon wings had that weird pockmark bullshit, and that's just become Games Workshop's wing thing, because they've clearly never in their lives Google image searched a bat. So they just have no idea what the fuck wings made out of like a fleshy membrane look like, because there's no such creature to use as inspiration. No, I mean, this model's a hot fucking mess. Because plain and simple, it literally commits every single modeling sin we have ever talked about on this show. There is way too much bling and flash and Marks of Khorne. Like, an Eldar guy with his soul stones is looking at the just quantity of Marks of Khorne and just being like, you know, maybe you could tone it down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 12 soul stones, okay, 15 Marks of Khorne, over the top.
Totally.
Not after Labor Day, right?
Oh, absolutely. But like I said, it's just like, it's weapons. Everything. Because when you look at, like, you look at the wings, first of all, why the fuck are there Marks of Chaos in the backs of the wings? It's pointless.
Completely
unnecessary. Why are they hanging bullshit chains with skulls and just bullshit chain with a mark of Khorne off of the edges of his wings? It's unnecessary flash. The base of this model is probably the single most bland... base that we have seen Games Workshop put out for a year.
We've seen
phenomenal bases coming out of all of the End Times releases.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen all sorts of interesting things, and then we get this, which is so reminiscent, and yet so much more poorly done, the High Elf Dragon, how it had like the rocks going up, but at least that filled the base. It gave the model a lot of depth that just... this doesn't have because of the base. And it's just like fucking chains and marks of Khorne on everything. Like, almost every skull has a mark of Khorne chiseled into it. So like I said, it just, this model commits every one of like our fucking gaming flaws. And the only thing that I can say to do is just go buy the Forge World one. Because the Forge World one is still perfect. Yeah, the Forge World one's £148 versus $139 Canadian. So you're looking at spending another, what, $60 more?
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to be so much happier with it.
Because,
like, when all I was getting was, like, the shitty pre-release, blurry, grainy, faraway images of this model, I was like, oh, it doesn't seem too bad. The pose is definitely better.
Yeah.
For me, I was just like, I want to see a side-by-side of the Forge World one and this guy to see, is this guy even worth the money? But now that we have the zoom in, we have the 360, I can say that, like, he doesn't even compare. He's a piece of shit compared to that Forge World
one. Yeah, the Forge World model is, heads and tails, the better model. You do get some options here, which is nice. You can go Axe and Hammer Whip, or Axe and, I'm going to say Chaos Star Whip, or you can go Double-Handed Axe.
Double-Handed Axe looks cool, though.
Yeah, when you look at the other poses and the other, well, not other poses, I'm sorry. When you look at the other models, you can see that the bling are optional pieces. You can absolutely skip them in terms of, like, what's hanging off the wings. But really, I mean, In terms of the heads, the horns, the actual genuine horns look much better. But all in all, I just don't like the pose, and I don't like the wings, and I don't like the fact that it's just way, way, way over the top. We get
it. Yeah, like, that's the thing is, like, the wings are fucking ridiculous. So, yeah, like, the only thing that I could see taking this model as, specifically I'm looking at the one with the two-handed axe, because I actually really like that weapon, would be if you didn't put the wings on and just played him as Scarbrand. Because Scarbrand is the named Bloodthirster whose wings were torn off when Khorne hurtled him towards blah, 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 fluff. But he's a wingless Bloodthirster. And I think that this pose, specifically with that big two-hand axe...
You have to do some puttying, but yeah, you could make it work.
Yeah, definitely do some puttying to fill it up. I think that is the only way that I would look at this model and just be like, fuck yeah, sign me up. Because the wings ruin it. And when you have a big flying... Bloodthirster, like, this is the iconic Chaos Greater Demon. Let's be honest, this is the iconic one, and he's supposed to be this big, flying, scary craziness, and the wings ruin the model?
Yeah.
You need to go back to the drawing board.
Well, just from concept, I think it's really unnecessary. I get so sick of these action poses, these... I'm jumping through the air. Outstretched. Like, you know what? Close the wings, man.
Yeah,
close the wings.
Absolutely. Like, if I was
you know, just have them stand in there roaring or something, right? Like, a challenging pose would be much better.
But
like,
that's exactly what the Forge World one does. He's standing there, wings unfurled to be super intimidating, just screaming his rage. And it fucking works because of the presence of that model. Because, like I said, even if I was looking at this, I'd clip the fire off, I'd clip the wings off. Mm. You know, I would actually build a good scenic base for him so it's not just this bland piece of shit. And go with it from there. But, like, the fact that you're asking me to spend $140 on a model that I think requires so much additional work just to be palatable, talk about a strikeout.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Not even remotely. All right. So let's move on to the topic of today's show. We're going to be talking about the future of 40K. We're going to be talking about a lot of the rumors that we're hearing, mostly because of the fact that Games Workshop's release schedule and other games that we play's release schedule has basically left us with very little topical conversations to talk about, right? We talked about our our Closet of Shame last week, but that's mostly because we didn't have fucking anything else to talk about. As you guys know, listening to
my
the show,
God, are you showing them the man behind the curtain?
I'm breaking the fourth wall here.
All right, let's do it.
That's exactly it, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about the rumors here. When you had mentioned to me all the different rumors that are kind of like, oh, here's what Games Workshop's doing next. And, you know, we saw Harlequins and now we're going to see this, this, and this. We kind of said, or my reaction was, okay, so the future of 40K is the past. Right? Mm-hmm. Like this is the decision that they're making. They don't want to necessarily come up with anything new, but instead, as you said, now it's time to try to cater to the old gamer.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the first rumor we're going to talk about, Nathan?
Well, I mean, instead of talking rumor, we can move to that in a second, but it's just like, even if you just look at Harlequins, okay? Harlequins were an army loosely,
right?
In second edition Warhammer 40,000, when they rolled the clock into third edition and had to literally invalidate every codex because they changed the game systems were incompatible, right?
That's correct.
So in third edition, every army that they decided to keep and support was just put in the back of that main rule book. Mm-hmm. Harlequins were killed. Harlequins were removed. Necrons were removed. Sisters of Battle were removed. And then they moved forward. So now, I mean, Harlequin's kind of got that nod back, but, like, we get this whole complete codex, and we will review it when it comes out, but it's just, like, it feels so unnecessary. It felt completely unnecessary. And then when you look at their rumors for the rest of the year, we're not seeing any updates to existing armies, and it's all brand new. And I use brand new so loosely because it's all just old second edition shit or rumors from early third that are finally seeing the light of day. So, rumor has it that the next 40K release is going to be Adeptus Mechanicus. And, I mean, fucking 19-year-old me would be giddy at the idea of Adeptus Mechanicus as playable. I mean, God knows everybody wanted to play it when I was working for the company.
Yep.
Everyone wanted to Bits Order and try to convert their Skitarii and things of that nature, but here right now, I mean, I know you were a big fan of the Mechanicus. Do you even care?
No, I don't care. Here's the problem. I always wanted an Adeptus Mechanicus army. I was converting an Adeptus Mechanicus guard army at one point, and then I quit. It basically was one of those things where my view of this has always been, Adeptus Mechanicus is such a large part of the Warhammer 40,000 universe, it's silly to exclude them. And for years they did that. They just decided that the most you're going to get is a tech marine or like a tech priest, and then we're just going to talk about these guys cloaked in yada, yada, yada. But oh my God, look at all this fluff about Mars. Look at all this fluff about their armies and the technology that they keep and all these different types of things that are all very, very interesting. However, it is one of those things that's better kept behind the curtain in the sense that as you flesh out the Mechanicum, they lose all of their mystery, right? Harlequins are a great example of that. If you're going to go ahead and compare red apples to green apples, or I'm sorry, red apples to apples shaped like clown faces. And when we move forward in this comparison, it's like Harlequins are like aliens from the movie Aliens. It's better that you only ever see them in the shadows and that they don't ever walk out into the daylight, because as soon as they do, they're just not really scary anymore. Or they're not really interesting anymore. Because, yeah, when you first hear about Harlequins, you think to yourself, oh, man, that's kind of interesting. Like, this kind of weird Eldar army. And then when they actually show up, you're just like, it's fucking clowns, man.
clowns everywhere. The fuck is going on?
That's how I feel about the Mechanicum. Because the more that Forge World released for them, the less interested I was.
That's interesting. Because I did feel that a lot of the Forge World releases for them were interesting, but then, yeah, every now and then you would get a bland release.
Well,
and we know the Games Workshop is just going to come out and be like, all right, so all your Skitarii are standing on rocks.
Well,
and
Mars has rocks. They'll just be red.
Hey, there you go.
But, yeah, I think that that's a good point as well. The blandification is Games Workshop's MO right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just decided that, Mechanicum is two units of Servitors and two units of Cybermen. And then that's basically all you get on top of a couple characters. And then
it's Codex Astra Militarum with Feel No Pain 6+ as a universal special.
Pretty much, right.
There we go. We're jobs are good, guys. Let's just, instead of Ogryns, they're Phalanx. Holy shit, I'm writing this book right here. Games Workshop, are you listening?
Copyright, Jada Gamercast.
You will owe me royalties in 2 months, I guarantee it.
And I mean, that's really what it is. It just comes down to the fact that I think they are much better left in the shadow. I think that it's smarter to keep them in the shadow. And as I grew up, I totally came to understand that. Because I think, I've talked about this in the past where when you start a conversion project or you have some idea, what was it? I used the example of like my Space Marines when I wrote that how to make your Space Marine chapter thing. And the majority of it is humor making fun of other people's Space Marine chapter creations, at which point where I become self-deprecating and say like, oh yeah, I tried to do the same thing. It was fucking stupid. Like I hated it. Oh yeah, I thought it was great. I thought everyone in my Space Marine chapter needed to be a chaplain. So every single one of my sergeants and characters was a chaplain or had a Crozius, right? Like, I have a bag of like 35 Crozius, like no word of a lie. That was the idea that I had. And as soon as I started actually doing it, it fell apart and it was a dumb idea and I hated it and I moved away from it. So I think when it came to the Mechanicum, you got to a point when you were just like, so all I'm doing is just putting cybernetic arms on everything, right? Right. Like it just, all of the mystery is gone. All of the interest is gone unless, and this is my one caveat, unless Games Workshop is able to come up with a way to make them more interesting. Because if there's no mystery, they're not interesting, right? They're just a bunch of Cybermen with mechandendrites, as the books love to point out and love that word. Oh my God, they love that word. Oh, by the way, I'm just about done with Battle for the Abyss.
Is it as bad as I told you it was? Hey, listen, man, you don't read Ben Counter. Like, Battle for the Abyss was so bad that Ben Counter has not written a single Horus Heresy book since. And what's Battle for the Abyss? Book 6? Book 7?
7.
It is book 7, and they're on to, like, what, 41 now? And they're just like, listen, Ben Counter, you need to get the fuck out.
He uses the term charnel house, like, every chapter. It's really annoying. It's not a particularly well-written book.
Hey, guys, where do you
want to go,
Heath? I don't know. Why don't we go to charnel
all house? The dialogue is just really dry. I'm struggling through the end of that, but it's almost over, so I'm almost out of the woods. Anyways, I think that's the most important thing, is if Games Workshop is able to write a story or to make them more interesting, then, yeah, okay, I would get on board again, because I like the idea.
But I don't think that they can.
No, I don't think that they can either. That's
why.
Even
when you look at Space Marines, which are the most iconic, I mean, literally, they're so iconic that Games Workshop doesn't call them Space Marines anymore because they can't trademark Space Marines.
Well, no. Like, remember,
they're Astartes.
They're Astartes, remember?
Yeah, absolutely. The Adeptus Astartes. So the Astartes are just so fundamentally Games Workshop. And boy, does that sentence work in every possible meaning. But they are so fundamentally Games Workshop that it's just like, they bet the franchise on it. The single most successful Black Library franchise in existence has been the Horus Heresy, which is basically nothing but Marines.
Yeah.
And Horus Heresy is the single most successful thing that Forgeworld's ever done, and it's nothing but Marines. Like, there is so much fervor here, and yet the rules bastardize the fluff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like...
Well, yeah, absolutely.
When you are reading Marines in the fluff, you have one Marine single-handedly walk up and, like, murder 20 regular humans, and at worst he's like, oh, he scratched the paint!
Right.
Guys, he scratched the paint on my armor! What the fuck?
I think one of the things about, like, Battle for the Abyss, which I think plays very heavily into, like, this whole idea of, like, you have to make them interesting, you have to make them cool. The way that the book is currently written, there is not a single redeeming quality of the Word Bearers, and it's like, but I know the Word Bearers. The Word Bearers are actually a cool legion, but the way the book writes them, they are awful. They're all, like, every single one of them is the Pope, basically. And they all have terrible accents, and they all just... Like, every single one of them comes off as just
pompous.
Now, do
they have terrible accents because the dude that is narrating the book...
The dude decided that they have to roll their R's in everything that they... Like, in every word they speak. We are the bearers of the world. Bearers.
So in other words, he thinks that they're Scottish.
Yes.
That's fucking...
Oh, dude, like, just the level of which, like... And anyways, it's not just that. It's just the way the book is written... They make Word Bearers uncool, and that can never be the case. Like, when I was reading Betrayer, Aaron does a very good job of making the legions you're supposed to hate still come off as very cool and very interesting, right?
Well, yeah,
and
even
this
when you're
book
watching
makes you hate Space Wolves, it makes you hate Ultramarines, and it makes you hate Word Bearers.
Because, yeah, like, that's what I was going to say about Betrayer is, yes, it's told from the World Eater's perspective, so obviously they're very favorable.
Well, they're the main character.
The Word Bearers, they're very favorable. But even when they're attacking Armatura, you can't help but just be like, fuck me, Ultramarines are cool as shit.
Yeah, when the Ultramarines come down hard, or like when they flash back to the Space Wolves, you know.
Oh, totally. And
going after the Word Bear, or the World Eaters. Like,
yeah,
even that,
like,
was much better.
Everything about it is so cool. Every Legion has something to it. No, that's unfortunate. But going back to my point about why Adeptus Mechanicus will never, like, when they release this book with... Thankfully, Matt Ward has no hand in the fluff, but when they release the fluff and they release the rules, all you're ever going to be is just a little bit disappointed because it's never going to match what you know. It's never going to match the fiction when it's just like, oh, the Skitarii come flooding out of the Warlord Titan's feet and they just start fucking straight up murdering everything around it and protecting the Titan at all costs. It's never going to be that cool. I think that's the problem. It's like Games Workshop now, we've seen it with Harlequins. We're going to see it with Adeptus Mechanicus. Rumors have it that we're also going to see this year both the Gene Stealer Cult and Death Watch. And again, like, old me was clamoring for all of these armies, except
oh, yeah.
I think Harlequins. I know people that were clamoring for Harlequins.
Well, remember, that was my answer from way back. Like, if they could make any army, what would it be? Like, what do you want? Like, what is the thing you want more than anything? And I was like, Death Watch. I love Death. I think Death Watch is still one of the coolest ideas, from a, like on a Space Marine level. Just like these guys are the elite of the elite, and they are the top guys from each legion sent to do these stuff. Like, I absolutely love Death Watch, and the fact that they're doing it has me very interested. However, again, this is one of those things where it's much better on paper than it is in practice. Because how are Death Watch going to be any different from Space Marines?
Well, any different than Grey Knights.
Right,
look,
Grey Knights.
Guys, we have these
options here.
Well, and I think the other problem is, specifically when we start to see things like Harlequins, when I actually get my hands on it, and Death Watch, and even Gene Stealer Cult, these don't feel like full ideas and playable armies. These feel like the Grey Knights Codex did when I was reading it, when I was just like, yeah, you can play it, but you shouldn't, because this is an ally dex. Mm-hmm. So are we just gonna get this half-assed $60 ally codex that has some fluff and is just their nod to try to get the old jaded fucks back? Like, I don't know. Like, are these actual projects that the studio is excited about, or is this literally Games Workshop going, any army we ever had, we're going to bring back, like, going to have squats next year? Because at this rate, everything old is new again.
Right.
You know, we're getting all of their second edition ideas, good or bad, are coming to fruition in 2015. So yeah. It's just like, can we expect squats next year? Because there's still that one guy who's really choked up and hasn't moved on. And if we can get him to buy a new squats army, P.S. he won't, he plays Blood Bowl, he'll just use all his existing models. Then, hey, that's a sale. But, like, I just don't get it. I just don't see it. Because you're right. You are excited about Death Watch. For me, Gene Stealer Cult was always the most hilarious thing. Like, I loved the idea of the Tyranids having an intelligence enough to just be like, listen, we send Gene Stealers in. They infiltrate. They create a cult. They subdue the army. They set off the warp beacon. We come and we eat. It's fucking free meal. I love the idea of the Tyranids being that intelligent, and I always thought the Gene Stealer Cult was super cool, and God knows I lamented the fact that in 6th edition, Guard and Tyranids were come the apocalypse, so you couldn't even make a Gene Stealer Cult.
Yep.
And yet here we are, and I was...
Well, it's one of those things where even the Gene Stealer Cult, what is it? The Gene Stealer Cult is a bunch of humans who are essentially infected by Tyranid, for lack of a better word. It's not a virus or a plague
Talk
or anything like that.
Talk to your doctor about Tyranid today.
That's right. If your erection lasts longer than 4 hours and has claws, talk to your doctor about Tyranid today. Because we all know that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, it's the pincers. That's correct. No one really wants the pincers.
I mean, crab claw I can live with, because there's some things you can do with that. But pincers, actual claws, I mean, that's the end of your
right, career. That is just too much. No, but I mean, like,
crab claw, can we both agree? I mean, that's why Slaanesh goes crab claw.
Right, absolutely.
Right.
Because a myriad of uses.
Right, I call that the tantalizer. But yeah. All they basically are, to break it down for you, is that they are humans and Imperial Guards sometimes who are infected by Tyranid, who essentially make a world ready for the Tyranid's arrival by destabilizing the government, right? They are intelligent, and they essentially worship the Tyranids as some, you know, deity of the galaxy.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, there is a
Great Devourer.
Patriarch and a Magus who are super powerful psychers, and basically the whole point is, you infect the human population, creating hybrids and creating, you know, gene stealers, because anyone that is part gene stealer is part of the cult.
That's right.
And they talk about how I think it's every fifth or sixth generation will always be a pure strain gene stealer regardless. So, you know, the gene stealers smuggle onto the planet. They have these supremely powerful psychers. And then it's all about creating hybrids until you can eventually get into the Planetary Defense Force, work your way up and start infecting, you know, generals, that, you know, fighters, getting promoted up the ranks.
Like somebody who has a limo.
Basically, that is why they have armor value 9 limos as troop transports, and it's fucking hilarious. And the whole point is, you know, we spend 100 years on this planet with this cult so that when the time comes, we literally just turn the defenses off, signal the Tyranids, and
Tyranids show up and they eat the
Tyranids planet. Show up, they eat everything on the right. planet without a shot being fired.
And keep in mind that this was also one of the core villains, the nemesis, so to say, of, like, Ordo Xeno's Death Watch.
Yes. Because, like, yay, it's easy enough to be like, we don't like Eldar, but the Death Watch's number one raison d'etre was to combat Gene Stealer cults.
Yeah. Combat Tyranids almost exclusively. It was one of those things that I think it works. It works as an idea. I love the idea of being able to take Death Watch. But again, as you said before, this is very much an allied army. You're not going to look at Death Watch and go, oh, yeah, absolutely, Death Watch all by themselves. I'm just going to take 10-man units of Space Marines. Like, I'm just going to take 10 veteran squads, and that is my 1,700-point list. You're going to have all the same shit that you would normally have. You're going to have fucking Rhinos and Razorbacks and Land Raiders and all the same shit. Like, I think that is where it really fails for me. Like, the same way the Grey Knights Codex failed for me, just like you said, in the sense that there's actually really only, what, five, maybe six units in there total. Terminators of two types, Marines of four types, character of two types, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then just all your Space Marine vehicles, have fun. So I don't expect anything out of Death Watch. I think Death Watch are still a great idea, and I love them, but we already saw the Death Watch rules adapted as Stern Guard, so it's like, well, what are we expecting new out of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's it. Is like what we're seeing right now from Games Workshop. And on the one hand, I appreciate it. I appreciate the fact that they're not just being like, surprise, we're going to start revamping 2-year-old codexes now. Because that's good. Like, I remember for years upon years upon years, they could not revamp codexes before they revamped an edition. So there were always codexes that fell by the wayside. I mean, right. Dark Eldar were on a 3rd ed decks and 5th ed. Sisters of Battle got so old that they just fucking threw them away.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore, guys. Sorry.
Right? Literally. We always saw this cycle because they're like, holy shit, guys, the game system doesn't work. We need a new edition so we can revamp it. Oh, revamp? Well, now we have to do the starter set races and then the top sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, we always saw this. And it's new for Games Workshop to be caught up. It really is. Because, other than Army,
it is literally the only time I remember it being the case in my entire gaming career.
I've played since 98, and this is the first time I've ever seen them caught up. Assuming that 6th Ed Codexes count.
They count.
6th and 7th are the same edition. It was an errata that they charged you $100 for. That's the thing where it's just like, okay, so what do they do? Do they either just start throwing models out, or do they start going back to the well and coming out with these things? And that's the part where I'm just like, I appreciate that. I appreciate that you're not trying to revamp my Space Marine Codex, which is perfect, just so you can blandify it, take every chapter trade out, and say the only difference between the chapters is the color you paint them.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to that 3rd edition mentality. I'm happy. I'm happy about that. But is going back to abandoned ideas the way to go? And that's where I'm just like, it feels a little bit desperate. It feels like pandering. It feels like they're trying to convince people that have left the hobby to come back. And I don't feel like the reason you leave Games Workshop is not because your favorite army of 20 years ago has been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are so many more pressing issues, from price points to the way that they treat their customers. And none of that is being addressed. So instead, I don't know, man. Like, I just do not understand.
It feels very desperate to me. And that's all it really comes down to. I think that they can't come up with new ideas. The Tau was the last idea that they came up with that was new. Everything since then has been the same old stuff, re-released, repackaged over and over again with a new unit that is a variation of another existing unit. And I think that they're so completely out of ideas that when somebody says, you know, what about a new army? What about a new Xenos army? You know, like, let's think of something complete, like, let's do Vespids. Let's do a completely new, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I think that they're just so desperate to put out something that's actually new that they just say, well, you know what, we've got all this other stuff sitting here, why don't we just do it, right? Like, one of the other things you had mentioned to me was Kroot Mercenaries.
Yes, that was the newest rumor that showed up in the last day or two, where they're just like, hey, everybody, Kroot Mercs, they might be showing up again. And again, for me, I'm just like, why? I mean, I can't, other than my wife, I cannot name a second Tau player that uses Kroot, period.
Right.
You know, and even then, I feel like the only reason she does
is... Jason always had some Kroot.
I was going to say, is it's that third edition, fourth yep. edition holdover from... They were phenomenal, and now that they're okay, why would you? Why they're not great at all? Why would you ever choose to take Kroot instead of more Fire Warriors?
Right, exactly. I think Kroot Mercenaries is kind of the best example of whatever, just take them as allies that we're going to get out of any of these examples. Kroot Mercenaries is specifically mercenaries. They are, we will literally, anyone who will pay us in whatever, I don't know, bones and birdseed.
Click, click, click. Yeah.
Right.
Bones and birdseed.
Bones and birdseed. I played bass for them. basically, like, whoever will pay us the bones and the birdseed, we will go with our gigantic Kroot spheres, and we will go drop on planets, and we will fight people for you. Which is interesting, sure, great, it works for Tau, it kind of works for a couple of other armies, but for the most part, they are 100% an allied army, and that's kind of how they were meant to play, to be played when they originally came out. So I think it's strange that this is a possible release that we're going to see, because it's really long after the last Tau book was released. You would think that this would be something that would follow, like immediately precede the Tau Codex update from a long
time. You know, but I think it was, because I remember when the Tau were redone, Games Workshop was still a big fan of supplemental codexes, and I love them. I play Clan Raukon.
The big starts of it, right?
Well, yeah, because the first one was Farsight. It was Eanden.
Eanden,
the second
then
one was Farsight Enclaves. And so there's huge chatter that there was going to become a supplement codex style Kroot Merc army that was going to introduce a Kroot Merc HQ and a couple of other, like, things to throw around and change up your force, your force org to allow it. And then Games Workshop just decided that supplemental codexes were bullshit. And I hate them, because, like I said, I play a supplemental codex. I love Clan Raukon. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I think that the things that they have done with Crimson Slaughter and with Black Legion for Chaos Space Marines are both really interesting and help that codex a lot.
Oh, like, very much so.
I love the idea of supplemental codexes.
The supplements were all strong.
I think that was
the biggest thing, is the supplements in every single situation, you would look at them and go, okay, are they necessarily better than their mother codex? Okay, maybe, maybe not. Like, it's not a 100%, like, if you play these guys, you play this. But if you like this thing, it is better to play this. Like, oh, if you like Crisis Suits, you want to play Farsight. Oh, yes. Do you like Chaos Terminators? You want to play Black Legion. Like, where it was just, you know, but if you pick this one unit, the best way to play them is this. And well, I think that's what I appreciate, is they were still strong options.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Is like, you know, even when you look at Sentinels of Terra, who are potentially the weakest of them, they straight up changed the Imperial Fist chapter traits.
Yeah.
And yet, if you truly looked at it and you're like, you know what, this is how I want to play my Imperial Fists, it worked. And it worked so much better than if you decided to play them another way. And that's what I appreciated about those supplemental codexes, is if you chose to play your list in a certain way, you could get lots of benefits. Otherwise, why would you abandon your parent decks?
Yep.
And now we're not, and now, again, we've seen that completely fall to the wayside. We don't see any supplemental codexes at all. Which is such a goddamn shame, because they were so good. And instead we're getting half-baked ideas that the studio decided not to move forward with 20 years ago, mm-hmm. coming out and getting full-fledged codexes. Like, Krupp Mercs was a hilarious idea because when Tau first came out, Krupp became like a mini-celebrity. Lots of people loved the Krupp models. Yep. They thought the Krupp fluff of being a mercenary in the 41st millennium, because they truly were the first mercenaries.
Yep.
Was a great idea, and so lots and lots of people liked them, and the Krupp Merc list was this chapter-approved, white dwarf, you know, wink and a head nod kind of list, where they're just like, listen, buy all the Krupp you want, and take them with anyone, except Tyranids. Yeah. Tyranids will fucking eat them. Which made sense, and again, like, as a Tyranid player, I was like, haha, we would eat them. We would eat every last one of them. So no, that's great. And now we're just seeing Games Workshop, and I'm not going to say vet the farm, because I don't think that they ever have any release that they are so invested in that, you know, if it failed, they would lose everything.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case at all. Like I said, I think it's just desperation. I think they're out of ideas, they can't think of anything new or interesting.
And I mean, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit fell through, so I mean, no one was able to get their bonus Ferrari from The Hobbit licensing deal. And God, I mean, if we can't get a Ferrari as a bonus, I don't even know why we do this job.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lord of the Rings is well past its time. Nobody cares anymore. We are saturated by six fucking movies. And
three good ones, three Hobbit ones.
Perfectly good example. So basically what it comes down to is nobody really cares anymore, right? It's like saying, hey, everybody, we're making a Harry Potter tabletop game. You're just like, oh my God, fucking why? Why do I need it? And like, not only is this we're making a Harry Potter tabletop game, but like, this is the sixth version of the Harry Potter tabletop game that we're releasing, you know, where, don't get me wrong, I'm now suddenly invested in the idea of a Harry Potter tabletop game, but, it's one of those things where, it's past its time. Like, nobody wants Lord of the Rings games anymore. Nobody cares about a new Nazgul model. Like, you know, like, it just doesn't matter anymore. And with these ideas, I feel like this is part of the problem with what Games Workshop is, or what these rumors are essentially indicating that Games Workshop is thinking, is that, oh man, these things are, we've been holding these cards forever. Right? It's like keeping that naked picture of your wife for 35 years and then finally showing it to somebody and they're just like, okay, but that's like a really old picture and I have virtual, you know, I have fucking Oculus Rift. I don't need to see an old ass picture of boobs. Like, nudity means nothing now. Right? It's like, you ever watch John Oliver?
Yes.
Okay. So, on YouTube, he has that bit where he says, how is this still a thing?
The swimsuit edition.
The swimsuit edition, where he's just like, how is this still a thing? How is this keeping this magazine afloat? Like, it is as if the people who buy this thing don't understand that at any point on your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your computer, your work computer, you could just type in boobs and see naked women.
Right.
Why are you going and buying a magazine of women in swimsuits? It's just completely, like, how is this still a thing? That's kind of how I feel about it with these things. You know, showing me Gene Stealer Cult now is too little too late, right? Like, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. I just don't care anymore. If you'd showed it to me 10 years ago, I'd been like, oh, fuck yeah, let's do Gene Stealer Cult.
Well,
God, Death Guard, let's do it. I've grown up now. I just don't, I've seen more than enough boobs.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it. It's like, after being told for 10 years straight that it's never going to happen, we never need to see it happen, there's more than enough factions, there's more than enough diversity, there's no need for more things, they can't support it, and now for them to just be like, surprise, every idea we said no to is coming up. 2015, year of regrets. Games Workshop, baby.
It's like we've handed them the divorce papers, and they're coming back going like, no, don't leave, I swear. Okay, I'll do anal now. Just stay. I'll do anything. I'll swallow.
Right.
You know, it's about standards. It's actually kind of a depressing example.
It's depressing, but it feels so apt. Because, like, here I am, I think for the first time in my life.
It's okay.
Right? For the first time in my life, I'm at the point where I'm like, I can't actually see myself choosing to play this game ever again, and I'm actively looking at selling all of my stuff for it, and now they're just like, remember all those things you wanted? Remember how you wanted this? Look, it's here! Just buy it, okay, guys? Just fucking buy it, it'll be great! And you're like, nah, but I still don't care.
Well, it's just I don't care anymore, right? Like, there was a time when I cared. There genuinely was a time when if they had released a Death Watch army, as I had said in the past, I'd have snapped it up, and I'd be playing Death Watch.
Yeah, but because of the fact that Gene Stealer Cult 5 years ago, I would have been playing a Gene Stealer Cult. 3 years ago, I'd have been going whole ham on an Adeptus Mechanicus.
Yeah, Kroot Mercs, that would have been on the plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so, I would love to hear what you guys think about this. Feel free to comment on the Facebook group and stuff like that. The question that we have for you guys is, are you excited for old ideas? And that's going to be my weekly listener poll. I'm going to word it, of course, in such a way that the people vote in weird directions, but whatever. that's the weekly listener poll question. I think there's not much more to say about the fact that the things that they seem to think are going to excite us just have no effect whatsoever. And all it really comes down to is it's that same analogy where it's just like, but I've seen boobs. I've seen lots of them. I just don't care about boobs anymore. Right? Like, I will always look at boobs and go, boobs. Those are nice boobs. Those are ugly boobs. I will still have an opinion on boobs. that is like the absolute best description of my interaction with Games Workshop now. We're like, I'm watching, what am I watching right now? Spartacus. I'm on like season 3 of Spartacus. And that show is softcore porn. Dicks and boobs for miles. And I'm so unfazed by it. Even where like I'm watching the show and I'm like fast forwarding through the sex scenes. Because it just seems like so much wasted time.
Obviously more than Game of Thrones. Because like in Game of Thrones, you're still just like, are we going to see Daenerys' boobs again? Because I'll go throw in season 1 again if I have to, but I mean, I'd rather not have to get out of my chair to enjoy that.
It's just funny because so many people from Spartacus are in Arrow. So now when I watch Arrow, I'm just like, I've seen him naked, I've seen her naked, I've seen her naked, I've seen her naked.
I've seen her naked with her and him.
Correct. No, like, it's really, really fun. But that's just the way that I feel about it now. It doesn't excite me the way that it used to. And I look at it and I go, all right, yeah, those are boobs, man. Like, good for you. It's like people who sexed, I don't understand necessarily.
Well, like, or did you watch which version of the new Power Rangers did you watch? The Not Safe for Work or the one on YouTube?
The Not Safe for Work.
Oh, okay. Do you want to know the difference between that one and the Safe for Work one?
The one scene where the girls are in the bed with boobs.
Yes, instead they're wearing bikini tops. That is it. That is the entirety of the difference. And you're just like,
well,
why would you even bother making 2 cuts of this?
Well, it's like, okay, we're into something shiny territory here. The Power Rangers short film is phenomenal.
Yes.
Absolutely enjoyable. But it's one of those things where it's like guys who are like, oh, dicks on screen. Oh, I don't want to look at dicks. Oh man, dicks are gross. And it's like, I don't understand why you're so scared of dicks. Like, you own one. Like, you've seen it a lot. Like, you should be very familiar with dicks more so than the opposite.
Right.
So I always get a kick out of that when people like they'll watch a show or like people who are just really homophobic or just like, oh no, it's fucking gross. It's just like, I think I'd be really good at it. You know, I mean, I know what I like. I think I would be able to provide what another man would like with varying levels of success. Who knows? I might enjoy it. I don't know if I might not enjoy it. Shit. You know, it seems a lot easier than, you know, what I do on a regular basis to the opposites. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems so much more straightforward. Get it? Straight.
Well, it has a little bit of curve to it. That is not super straightforward.
Straightforward with a slight hook to the left. oh, my God. Somebody posted on one of the comments asking me if Jupiter Ascending was bad the way that Tremors was bad, in the sense that, like, Tremors is bad, but it's awesome. First off, don't ever say Tremors is bad. I'll punch you in the face.
Yeah, Tremors
secondly,
is great.
It is bad on the level of, like, I'm not going to compare it to Starship Troopers, because Starship Troopers is good and bad at the same time. This movie is so bad, it is like a train wreck. And it's enjoyable, but, like, I would never watch it again. Like, if somebody said, like, hey, man, you want to go watch Jupiter Ascending again? Nope. I was like, fuck no.
All right, hold on, hold on. Would you ever watch Man of Steel again?
We had this conversation. At one point, I was interested in watching again to see whether or not I would enjoy it more or less. But I am now convinced that I would hate it if I watched it again. Just, it's, remember, it's like 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah. See, a part of me, like, still wants to get it to edit Russell Crowe out of that film, because I feel like you have a phenomenal 2 hour and 5 minute long film, because you can get rid of some of the Zod fight, because as much as I loved Michael Shannon,
yeah,
and that fight was disaster porn,
you watch,
like, whoa, you get so fatigued.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, look, it's the 19th skyscraper that's coming down.
Right. Do you watch the honest trailers for that, for Man of Steel?
Oh, shit, no, but I might have. I probably did. I know I've seen CinemaSins for it.
The CinemaSins, no, this is the Screen Junkies one for Honest Trailers, Man of Steel. And it is amazing. Here, I'm going to put it into Skype for you.
Oh, okay.
We'll watch it afterwards. But yeah, like, I think that sums it up so well.
Mm-hmm.
That it makes it very, like, it's very clear to me I don't want to watch it again. Like, they do such a good job of pointing out everything I hate about that fucking movie that I feel like if I went and watched it again, I would despise it. And I don't despise it, I just don't like it right now.
Mm. Right? So, sorry, I'm just trying to get a feeling on the Jupiter Ascending range.
Okay, like, so Jupiter Ascending is literally terrible. It is so terrible, it is a train wreck, and that is why you have to see it. It's like...
So, it's, like, really, you're describing the last four Fast and the Furious movies. You know this,
no,
right?
No, Fast and the Furious is, like...
so bad, it's a train wreck. You have to see it because it loops back around onto the good spectrum. Like, they throw the ball so hard that it hits the bad wall and it bounces right back to
good.
Here's
the difference. The difference is, I am convinced that the people who make Fast and the Furious know exactly what they're doing. They don't think it's art. They don't think it's gold. They know exactly what they're making and why they're
car
making.
Party scene.
That's right. I was talking to Maddie when we went to go see Jupiter Ascending. I was like, you want to know how you check to see if somebody is on the same page as you about Fast and the Furious? Is you ask them this question. So I'll ask you right now, Nathan. What is Fast and the Furious about?
It is about fast cars and scantily clad women partying.
No.
With a loose semblance of a plot.
No, Nathan, Fast and the Furious is about family. Right? But you laugh because you get it. You get it. That's what that movie is about. They know exactly what they are doing when they make
it. You're only saying that because that is literally what they say in, like, yes. Vin Diesel's first words in Fast 7's trailer.
It's so good.
It's about family.
I have family. No, and, but, like... That joke is, like, you know exactly what's going on there, and that's why Fast and Furious is awesome. Anyways, so, that is the Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.